I want to start out by saying congratulations to Jocko. Jocko's Kickstarter closed just a little while ago, like 30 or 40 minutes ago or something. Yep. And I didn't look at what the total number was, but it was a ridiculous amount of money.
It's overfunded, which is good for him.
Yes. So, awesome. Yep. I'm just really happy for him that this little thing that he thought was going to be just like a kind of simple idea that nobody would really want. And, you know, he even used that in the marketing and everything, and it just exploded.
Yeah. Congrats, buddy.
Congrats,
we spoke the other day before it closed, and he said it's really blown up much more than he ever expected. He said he thought he was going to have just a few to make there, and that was it. Now he's got to figure out how to make thousands.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, 532,000 euros. Oh, boy. That's a lot of money.
Wow.
Good for him.
Yeah,
good for him. Anyway, yeah, that is a lot of screwdrivers. Well, what's going on?
I remember I've talked about, for a long, long, long time, I've talked about making a Sam Maloof-inspired chair, and I'm actually starting that. I started that the other day, and I'm working on that. It's going to be a video for Rockler. I have to have it done by the end of the... I think I'm trying to shoot to have it done by Sunday, but I don't know. But it's exciting. It's a lot of bandsaw work, and it's for me, it's obviously something I have a natural ability for. So I'm real excited to like start sculpting. I'm making the basics right now. I'm making like the seat and the four legs that'll become, you know, the two long ones that'll become the backrest and the two short ones that'll become the forward legs that hold the armrest. So I'm digging into it. So I'm looking forward to getting it pieced together so that I can then take it apart and really start sculpting it. You know, I'm just going to get the basic joints put together. Yes, David?
Are you building this from photos that you've seen, or do you have measurements?
Yeah, I'm just, it's funny. I think I had this conversation with two avocado designs. I forget who. And my buddy Jordan. Sorry, I'm a little congested this morning. I just looked at some chairs. I just looked at some of his, and then it's funny, I started realizing some of them were inspired by, which is what I'm going to do. So then I actually had him upgrade my Google search to Sam Maloof chairs, you know, real chairs, because there's hundreds and hundreds of images. And the inspired by and the ones he made look obviously extremely close to the same. So I'm going to try and go off. I'm going to color outside the lines a little bit, get everybody really jazzed up and upset with me. But it'll, you know, from 10 feet away, I think it'll look the same. But I'm not going to do any, I'm not going to do exactly the way he would have done it. Because I have to, I realize in my construction of this, I have to take it apart and put it together a couple of times. At least I think so. Maybe not. But, you know, obviously this is my first go around. And I'll make this one, and then this one will be my basis for another one if I ultimately make a second one. So this is my go-to-school Maloof-style chair. But like I said, I didn't really... Someone said, have you seen him making one? I said, I have, but it's, I don't want to look at one right now and be... Mm-hmm. You know, get you know, pigeonholed into something that... I want to just freestyle it on my own and just, you know, use his inspiration and my own personal experience as an artist to see what I come up with. And,
I like
you know, just with a quick glance, I could realize, oh, this has to attach that way. And then these get trapped between those two things. And then this could be a through tenon, or it doesn't have to be, you know, these are the type of things these are the decisions I'm making. So, and I'm making it out of walnut. So it's fun.
I was going to say, after you make it, will you go back and see his process to see if it compares or if there was a better way?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I've seen it, but not recently. You know, I'm not brushing up on it right now. I mean, I might if I find myself cornered while I'm working on it. And I'm also doing something really interesting, which is something I don't know why I never thought of. But so, you know, when people say, he's just making it for video. Yes, I am just making this chair for video because I'm in agreement with Rockler and we brainstormed up a few things that I've been wanting to make. And this is one of those things. So I won't have a video for my channel because this will go on the Rockler channel. So I had this brainstorm the other day. I said, why don't I shoot a documentary style video? Aaron's been holding the camera and asking me questions from behind the camera. I said, just be as free and loose as you feel like it. If you have anything, just ask me because it'll trigger me to talk. So he's been holding this little point and shoot camera that we have behind the scenes while, like, I just, you know, he's just standing behind the tripod while I'm actually shooting the video. So there's going to be my typical style, fast paced video. And on my channel this weekend, and they're okay with it. Rocco thought it was a good idea. There'll be a documentary style. So today's Friday. Hopefully this will be up Sunday. We'll see.
You know.
So we'll see. So I'm going to do this kind of like me explaining, me kind of just, you know, freestyling into the wild, not really having a plan and talking it through and just solving on the fly. So that'll be, I think it'll be a good companion video. It'll be completely different than anything I've done till now, but it's better than leaving an empty space, I believe. And it might prompt me to do something really off the cuff. You know, it's like I'm not worried about like the camera angles and he's shooting me and I'm like, ugh, I would never put that version of me on camera because I'm always self-conscious about my love handles and stuff. But I'm just going to just say, you know, chuck it to the wind and go for it. So we'll see. We'll see if that turns into something. Hmm.
Do you remember when we talked about a Sam Maloof chair, you wanting to do that chair maybe 2 years ago or three
it's been
years
a while,
ago on this podcast? Do you remember the conversation about doing it out of plywood?
No, I don't. Is that something we talked about?
So, yeah, we talked about like, and I don't remember if it was just an idea that one of us threw out there or I just remember visualizing that style of chair with all of those kind of compound intersecting curves and joints and stuff built out of plywood and being sculpted down into that shape. And for some reason, that image has still been in my head ever since that conversation. Huh. So I was kind of hoping you would use plywood, but.
Well, I'll do that once everybody.
But I totally understand that that's not really a good. That's more of like an exploratory idea, not really.
I'm making this out of walnut. I didn't want to tell anybody this. I'm going to spoiler alert. I'm going to burn it when I'm done. So that's
And then put some metal.
You should paint it.
Cover it with metal.
Paint it, wrap it in steel, and then set it on fire.
What's wrong with you? Is everything okay? Like, you're throwing your career away on this video.
Jimmy, do you notice anything different with Bob?
Yeah, his sidekick is not in the background.
Yeah, and it's really bothering me.
There's an empty space in the room. Josh is not there.
Just Josh is not in there. Yeah, we redid the office, and so like Josh's desk was right here, and now it's actually right there behind me. So the two guys have the same wall.
But there's no R2-D2.
I think he's right over here. Everything's getting moved around.
Rolling his toes in the corner of the frame.
It's because right here in this wall that I'm pointing at that nobody listening can see, there's going to be this new giant thing that we're building that's going to go right there. So
nice. Video?
Yes.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it too.
Yeah.
Can't wait to talk about it. But this week, we actually are not putting out a video. Well, it's weird. We are putting out a video, but not on Thursday like normal. We did a project with the U.S. Navy, and it has to line up with all of their other stuff that they're releasing. So it's actually coming out on Sunday, which is kind of weird. And it's a strange project anyway, because it's like...
You can do it on Monday.
You can go talk to the Navy about it, because they have nothing to do with it.
Sunday is my day. You can't put it on Sunday.
So we did this like... It was like a challenge video from the Navy where they challenged me to quickly build like an inexpensive shelter thing. It's fine. It's a little weird. It's like just a challenge, which is not something I'm used to doing. It's on the wrong day, so it just feels like off to me, you know, because it's outside.
It sounded just like a curb your enthusiasm, like you're about to kind of promote it, and you just go, "It's fine. It's fine."
Well, I love that
you had like a whole conversation, and you had the split second before you went, "It's fine. It's fine."
I think it's great that both of you are making videos right now that's outside the norm of what you do.
Yeah, well, it's fine.
Yeah, I guess.
It's fine.
I don't know.
Bob's confidence level is not where it's normally at.
No, well, I think my video of behind the scenes is something people have always asked for, and I have it. I just never really show it unless I'm doing a vlog, which is also very intentional. But I think in the moment, which is something, you know, with ITM, you know, you hear that from TV producers. Oh, we could do an ITM. I'm like, okay, in the moment. I've never really done any YouTube-style stuff in the moment, except for Instagram stories, which is, you know, everybody does that. So I'm going to try and do kind of like an in the moment build thing. So it's definitely different for me, but I'm excited about it. I was going through the material this morning. There's some good stuff. Bob, are you, your video is going to release and it's going to show you building a shelter with given materials.
Well, it's actually, we did three videos with the Navy. One's on our channel and then two are on the Navy's channel. And so the one on ours is they gave me like a guidance on this is the criteria, build something, whatever you want. So I just made like a collapsible shelter out of really inexpensive materials. It's more of like an emergency type thing where if you had 50, 100 people who were out of a house. They didn't have anything. You could bring in a crate of these things, drop them down, and everybody could set it up. It's kind of like a hard tent kind of. Right. So anyway, the reason I kind of waffled on being excited about it is it's just a different thing for me. It's targeted at a very specific purpose, which is not a purpose that I have, right? So it was a challenge that was given to me, which just feels weird because it's not something I normally do. But it's a simple build. That's coming out on Sunday. And then on the Navy channel, we did a little kind of interview thing with one of the sailors. He's a welder. And so we talked about kind of what he does. And then there was another thing where they sent me a crate of materials, and then this group of CBs, which are Navy sailors in the construction brigade, that's what the CB is, they got the same crate. And so we both had to build a shelter with whatever they gave us. And they gave us all this random stuff, like a pool float and like a slinky and a mop. And we had to use all the stuff. And so that challenge video is going on their channel.
A shoelace anyway, and a Mr. Coffee. That's a deep reference to David Tell fans. Oh, shoelace and a Mr. Coffee. I'll make you some hobo chili.
David Tell called me out at a comedy show once.
Really?
Yeah.
Was he nice to you?
He made fun of the hat that I was wearing. I had like my little newsboy hat.
All right.
That's all. That's the whole story.
He's usually pretty kind. He's not usually mean. I met him a few times.
Oh, he did not want to be at the show. This was in Toledo about 5 years ago. And he just had his arm up against the back wall and just walked right through his set. It was so obvious he didn't want to be there. I was so disappointed.
Oh, that's a bummer.
But sorry.
We digress.
Right. David, what have you been up to?
I've got three videos shot and I just need to film the ending and put them out. Yesterday I made the sign for Reverend Guitars for their pickup line, which is called Railhammer. They're based in Toledo. They asked me to make a sign. I did it in trade for one of their bass guitars. So Dan and I went over there yesterday, delivered the sign, hung it up. I got my new bass guitar, and we shot a little bit behind the scenes there. And so last night I started writing a song with the guitar, and that's going to be the music for the video. So I feel like I'm forcing myself to write music with this new instrument that would go along with the video. And so I wrote something last night and I was like, I'm not a bass player. I mean, I barely consider myself a guitar player, but I come up with this riff that I think like it sounds good. You can see some finger movement. It looks like I'm actually playing the bass, you know? And then, so I'm adding to it and I add guitar to it and some drums and some other things. And I'm like, it sounds more like an indie rock song and not a song like a driving YouTube video. Like it doesn't have a good pace for a YouTube video. And so like, it's a good song, but I have to scrap it. It's just not going to work for the video. So then I come up with this other bass line. It is super simple and not impressive visually at all, but it's the song that's going to suit the video a lot better. So yeah, go ahead.
I have an idea.
Yeah.
So you use the video of the one where your hands move around, but you use the audio of the one that you like better, and then just let people figure it out. That'll be good.
So that video it's all edited except for the ending. And then I've got a couple picture frame videos. I'm remaking some videos that I did 5 and 6 years ago. I get my picture frame sled and a couple of the other jigs. And the reason I haven't released them yet is because I want to shoot all three videos and get them all done so I can release them almost back to back to back, because they kind of go with each other. The old videos that I shot 5 years ago, they're fine, but there's a lot of questions, and I made some improvements to the jigs. And so hopefully I answer all those questions and show off the new improvements this time. So I know, I'm out of ideas. So I'm remaking old videos now.
It happens.
It does. Yeah. Yeah.
You can always burn. You can make something and burn it. That always works.
That's phase two, where you've remade all your projects. And the phase two is you make them all again, but burn them. And then phase three is you make them all again, but you wrap them in metal.
Dan, so Dan
and I have crayons.
This running joke. Yeah, this is my pencil holder on my desk, and it's made with segmented Bubenga and Wenge.
Oh, I remember this one went horribly wrong on you.
It went horribly wrong. I went to melt crayons just over the lip and had the dripping crayons, and I was going to encase that in epoxy, and it just went horribly wrong. So the whole thing is melted crayons with epoxy.
I remember when you put that video out, I was going to send social services to see if you're okay.
Yeah, so underneath all that epoxy and crayon is beautiful Bubenga, but you would never see it.
Pencil can protective services. I was going to send them to make sure you were all right.
Yeah.
PC.
So anytime something goes wrong, Dan's just like, pour some crayon on it. If you hear noise, there are people working on our gutters right now. They didn't say when they were going to show up. They were just going to say we'll show up someday, and it happens to be podcast day.
You got to lie to them because everyone's like slightly passive aggressive. You just got to give them a different time zone, and that's when they'll show up. You know, say come at 10:30. But if you come at 10:30, I'll be doing my podcast, and they'll be like, oh no, and then they'll show up exactly like 11, like right in the middle of it.
Well, you asked for some topics, David.
I did.
What did you get back?
So, John, oh boy. John K, K-U-I-P-H-O-F-F. John asks, there's a lot of people making build videos. What makes a good build video? Is it storytelling, collaborations, community projects, life lessons? And I thought that was a good topic because I think it's definitely evolved from the time we started making videos to where we're at now. And I do think that those who started making build videos a long time ago have an advantage now, because I think when we started, there was a lot less competition's not the right word, but it's also the right word. And if you were going to start with build videos now, it's almost like you have to have a different take on it, maybe more storytelling and mm-hmm. less step by step. So you guys have any thoughts?
Well, it's funny because I keep using Bobby Duke as an example every week, and I'll do it again. But when I first met Bobby, he told me when he was doing videos, build videos, they weren't as successful until he began to interject his personality. So I think what makes a good video or a successful video, if you're really looking at the numbers, is different for everybody. You know, it's funny, lately my numbers have been low, so I'm thinking to myself, maybe it's time to like completely reinvent the concept of like a build video. And I actually, you know, part of my thought process was, let me start doing some, in the moment, behind the scenes stuff and see what that means. You know, video will get, 50,000 views and I'll deal with it and I'll take it from there. But just the idea of, I've been at it now on YouTube for at least 9 years. What can I do to freshen it up, change it, make it a little bit different with the tools that I have? I just recently, actually yesterday, I was in the city, had to go to a doctor just for a physical, a yearly physical. And I bought a new camera. I went and bought a new Canon NOR camera just to like reinvigorate my my interest in mm-hmm. cinematography. And every video I make these days, I just look at it and I'm like, were you even in focus? Like everything just looks horrible. And every lens I try and focus, just like I feel crunch in it. So I'm just scrapping all that. I'll keep it to have backup cameras, but I just bought a whole new rig, a new tripod, everything, just to invigorate and try and inspire some new stuff. I mean, I've been obviously working quite hard and making some money, so I treated myself. That's why I was talking to Jocko the other day. We were talking about cameras. And so I went out and got a new camera, but I want to start to think about how to basically freshen up. And, I think part of that will start with actual focused images. And if I can get a focused image...
It's a good plan.
That's a good start. So,
yeah.
What makes a good YouTube build video, I think, is really different for everybody, but there are definitely some things which you should stay away from. And I've said it 100 times. It's the surveillance video of the GoPro in the room. A lot of people get a GoPro and they get started, and that's a great way, but you have to be creative with a GoPro. You can't just... I mean, I usually shoot it as a B-roll. It's not necessarily... an A camera, use it as a B camera. You can use it as an A camera, which is like your primary camera, but you got to be creative with it. You got to hold it up close to the material. There is a focal point which it'll be out of focus. So you got to pay attention to that. But I think the most important thing to anybody that's going to start making YouTube video is to just be experimental and have fun. We've always said this, emulate somebody you like, but be experimental. I wasn't going to use him as a pick, but Casey Neistat has been doing vlogs again for the last few days. And you could tell he's just sketching, which is great. It's fun to see him just be creative and just have fun with his surroundings and his kids and his father-in-law has been in the last couple of videos. And he's just having fun. There's really no story, but it's refreshing to watch him. He always has interesting visuals and, you know, his personality is definitely likable. So I'm looking at that too, thinking, you know, and they're only 6 minutes long and he always seems to have a drone shot of him driving. I don't understand how that happens, but it's amazing that he goes that extra mile. It's like effortless to have like drone shot. Like to me, I'm like, I got to download the new software and blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. And my drone goes up and starts drifting into the telephone wires for some reason. But I think you got to stay away from the surveillance camera. You got to also, a big thing for me is the transformation. Like, what is the transformation? Like, this video of the Sam Maloof style chair is going to be a pile of wood to a rocking chair. Or, like, years ago, it just comes to mind because I'm looking at a picture of it on the wall. I made an old wrecked green Dodge Dart into two tables for a retail shop. You know, the transformation of one thing completely mutates into something else, you know. And if it's a pile of material, that's fine. Or if it's a restoration, you get the mutation of something that was, like, completely unusable to something that is now usable and cleaned up. Or, you know, you repair some of the parts. So that's really important. I'm always interested in seeing the mutation. Or, you know, in the case of someone like Smarter Every Day, like, what have you learned? You know, what don't you know in the beginning and what do you know at the end? You know, what are some of the conclusions that you draw if you're doing a different style of build video? And, you just got to have a beginning and, you know, set some questions up. You know, even if you're doing it silently like me, you're like, you see the material and you start seeing me in this rocking chair video. I am sitting, this will be in the documentary version. I'll be sitting in an old chair, just kind of recording some of the heights, width, length. And then I take that to paper and I start sketching. So the Rockler video will open up with me drawing on the side of drawing on a piece of paper. And like, that's like the chair doesn't exist. It's just pencils on paper, just pencil lines on a paper. And then eventually it will exist. So I'm always looking for that dramatic arc. Personally. And then this is just another really important thing. Just up close, intimate images. Up close, intimate images will pull you in. You know, like I always say, let the viewers see what your eyes see. That's it. You know, if you have your GoPro up in the corner of the room, just watching you run around sanding and running around, you know, that's unless that's evidence in a police trial, that's you know. It's not extremely interesting.
Yeah. David, what are your thoughts on this?
So I, as Jimmy was talking, I wrote down a couple of notes because I think the number one most important thing with my videos is pacing and flow. That is, there can't even be 1 second of I'm bored. Otherwise, people are out. If you're on your computer,
I made a horrible mistake. I missed it this week. I made a horrible mistake. I published the video of the gates, which is doing well for the first time. I got a number one out of the last 10 videos doing well. And there's two segments in there, which there's no audio because I did a lot of time lapse and I forgot to put music or fake sound under it. And it was already published. And I was like, oh, God, a horrible amateur mistake. I just missed it. But I might have accidentally deleted. I put a soundtrack onto those segments, and they might have accidentally got deleted before I realized it. Because you're always clicking around and this, that, and the other thing. But no, that's important. Pacing is, and you know, you don't want like audibly or visibly to come to some sort of weird halt. And that example is in that video that I just published in my gates, which is a bad example.
Yeah, because if you're at your desktop, you have 12 other videos that you're competing against. You're not competing against other DIYers are just other people in your circle, but you're competing against that viewer's likes. So they have all these options. They can click away at any time. My dog wants out. So like that is the most important thing. It's why I watch my videos like 15 times before I put it out, because there can't be 1 second of I'm bored. A couple other things is, I think about Destin from Smarter Every Day. He is always super excited to show you what he's about to show you. Like, you have to love what you are doing. If you are making a video just so you can make a video, that comes across. So you really have to be into it. And when I say you have to be excited about the project, you don't have to be like over the top yelling at the camera. You just have to genuinely love what you're doing. And that really helps. And then a couple other things is there has to be something interesting about the video. It has to be shareable. Just building another box isn't interesting. You have to find an angle. I mean, maybe 8 years ago, building a box was great because people want to know how to build a box. But now that there's a million building a box videos, you got to have that different angle. And so I think if you're just starting out, and I don't mean this in a bad way, but gimmick videos work really well. Building a guitar out of colored pencils, or, you know, I used 1,000 blah, blah, blahs to make this thing. I think those are great ways to get a lot of views. I don't personally use them because I'm not into them. And so I'm trying to make things that I'm really, really into. So there's a few thoughts that I had.
Well, I agree with you and I disagree with you.
That's great.
On that. So as far as the pacing stuff, absolutely. I mean, I think just video in general, that's like a thing you have to consider is the pacing. Not necessarily, I think that with the worry of people being bored, but you want people to be engaged. And you can't keep somebody engaged like you can't walk up to somebody in person and grab them and pull them an inch from your face and have a conversation there. You can't do that because it won't last. You also can't have a meaningful conversation at 20 feet away from somebody. There's got to be some sort of a middle ground there with kind of a flow in and out where you get closer and you have some conversation and you back off. And there's like, you know, if two people are standing there, they never stand perfectly still. There's always kind of a flow with the conversation, right? And I think you can do that that's what pacing is within a video. You draw somebody in, you get them excited, they're paying attention, and then you give it a pause and you like give some space and then you bring it back. And that's what the ups and downs of, you know, narrative arcs are and the pacing within a video. So totally right on that. The gimmick thing, I wholly disagree with. I think people do that and they get views from it, but I'll say in general, because nothing can be definitive. I think those are really hollow views. I think if you do, you know, I'm going to use 1,000 toothpicks to make this hot rod that drives in the moon or whatever the thing is, right? This like totally over the top, whatever. People are going to watch it because of, yeah, go for it. You can have it. It's all you. People are going to watch it. And I'm not saying that they won't get views from it and you won't get AdSense from it, but I seriously doubt the people that watch that video because of the title or because of the extreme nature of it are going to be like, oh, I want to see some more of what old, you know, so-and-so is doing with their next thing. Because if it's not 1,001 toothpicks, mm-hmm. because if it's not driving on Mars instead of the moon, if it's not escalated in some way, it's going to let them down. So I think you can do that, but you have to understand that you are on a path of escalation that is going to be really hard to keep up with unless you're Colin Furs, right? Because, I mean, right. that's like what he does.
I don't know how he does
it. And so I don't think that's I don't think that's a sustainable way to make build videos, personally. Now, that's my opinion based on what I do. So you can take that, you know, with a grain of salt. I do think that the opposite can also be a problem where you know, like you're saying, like a box video. I think if you just lean on, I'm going to make things that are 100% practical and to the point and super duper, like as minimal and as target and utilitarian as possible, that's not really going to be interesting. So there's got to be some sort of that breathing pace back and forth in between there. And I think all of us do this where we take something that is plausible to build. We take a picture frame or a guitar or a thing that you can build, and then we try to add a sprinkle of something on top of it that makes it a little bit more than the base, right? It makes it a little bit more. We set it on fire because that's cool.
You pick it on me.
Yes, absolutely. I am. you try to add a thing to it just to elevate it a little bit and keep the interest there. So I think that somewhere in there is a good middle ground of taking a thing that, you know, you can show off the process for, but you, at the same time, you can add a little flair to it that makes it stand out against somebody else's guitar video or somebody else's picture frame video or whatever. But if you start to go too far down into the clickbaity thing, it's just going to be really hard to make a career or make a long-term community out of that type of video. I'm not saying it's not possible.
Unless you're Mr.
Beast. It's very difficult. Well, yeah. I mean, there are absolutely exceptions to the rule. Yeah. But, like, unless you're Mr. Beast, you're not Mr. Beast, right? There's nobody else that can do that.
Yeah.
So it's, I mean, go for it. But I personally wanted something in the way that we do our videos. And, you know, we're always trying to change things and improve things, too. But we wanted something sustainable, something that we would enjoy and be able to keep up the pace with and be able to make sure that it has the value that it needs. So we chose to go a certain way at a certain pace so that it can last. And from my opinion, the extreme stuff is going to be a lot harder to make that sustainable. But I think the even bigger thing with this whole idea of like what makes a build video successful is the fact that there is an absolute ridiculous amount of audience. So even though I was talking to my friend Andy, we had lunch the other day and we were talking about this because he's a YouTuber. The number of creators in our space has just exponentially grown over the past few years. And there are so many people making videos in the maker kind of DIY community. A lot of people, a lot of bloggers are coming over and making video now. A lot of Instagram people are moving and making bigger YouTube videos. Man, excuse me. And, you know, the worry there is like, how do you stand out? How do you get some attention when all of these other people are starting at basically the same place in the same time? And the three of us and a lot of other people kind of in our class have been around long enough that we got kind of a head start against a bunch of the people who are younger in their channel development. The point I'm getting to is that the number of creators has grown. But if you put that growth rate next to the number of audience members, it's not a big deal. There is so much audience for so many different types of creators, for so many different types of videos and build videos specifically. No matter what you do, I firmly believe there's an audience out there for it.
I 100% believe.
It may take you a while to find that group of people, to get to them, to get your content to them, and for them to pass it around. That may take time. But man, there are so many people out there. And there's got to be people that are interested in what you do and how you do it.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So yes, you can mold what you're doing to try to hit the largest market, to try to find, you know, the easiest point of entry into a thing. And I don't think that's bad. But if you've got a vibe or a type of thing that you like to do, that's going to make it stick. And eventually you will find the people that is useful for. So
yes,
done.
Right. What do you guys, anything else to say? Recommend any videos, guys? No, I think it's important to just find your vibe. Also, what's really important is to find your unfair advantage. And for me personally, I have an addiction to buying antique machines, so I'm always looking for like a cool machine to use in the video. I don't always use them, but you know, that's really my excuse to buy them. But occasionally I find an opportunity to use an antique bandsaw. Like obviously I'm using the bandsaw, my big antique bandsaw, which it's a dream, because if I was cutting this on like a typical 14, I'm like putting like an 8 foot, 10 inch by 2.5 inch thick piece of walnut through the bandsaw. And it's just gliding through my three phase giant monster bandsaw. It's no groaning, no slowing. It's just like, it's like, oh, you want to cut that? Okay, let's cut it. And it just goes right through it. So like stuff like that is fun. And so I'm always looking for cool visuals. And, you know, obviously with a little bit of my YouTube fame and richness, I'm rich now, right? You guys know that I'm rich. I can mm-hmm. buy any junked rusty machine off of Facebook now because I'm rich. I can buy any machine.
It's a good thing you're not sarcastic, because that'd be a bummer.
Wish I had your. And, you know, my unfair advantage is that I have, you know, a lot of subscribers and I get a lot of views. So I can go to a company and say, hey, you want to give me one of those? And, you know, yeah, give me one of those. Yeah, that's great. You know, I know I'm being a little sarcastic, but that's my unfair advantage. You know, if you live next door to The Rock and you can look over the fence and say, hey, Rock, can I borrow a screwdriver and put that in your video? Put that in your video. So like Rock can make a cameo in your build video. I mean, that's a crazy example, but it's, you know, it, look for those unfair advantages, those funny little moments. Also humor obviously is important. So if you have a little, like a little humor break, you know, while you're in the middle of making your surveillance video, just joking, don't make a surveillance video. Whatever it is. If you have a cool old table saw, you know, let's say the table saw you're using was your grandfather's. Talk about it. Say, this is something that has sentimental value to me. And, you know, I can identify with that. I know many people can. Using a tool that has some heart and soul, talk about it if you want to.
Yeah, I think what Jimmy's saying is you have to inject your personality in there, something that makes your video unique. I think my unfair advantage is I went to school for graphic design. I've been a videographer, a web developer, a photographer, and
it all goes to the bottom line.
Audio engineer. And I get to use all of that in what I do. And so it's finding that cool, exciting, interesting, I think interesting is the right word, the interesting angle that makes your video unique. And it can be very discouraging to make a whole bunch of videos and not have that pacing down yet and not get the views that you were expecting. Just know that it comes with time and you're not going to get it on the first one, and you just have to keep plowing through it and keep doing it until you find what works for you. You find what works for your audience, no matter what the size that audience is. And it comes with time. I remember Bob and I were at Anaheim for one of those video conferences, VidCon or something, a few years ago. And this guy came up to me and he's like, "Oh, you're David. You know, we've made four videos and we're not getting any traction yet." I'm like, "That's because you've only made four videos. You have to keep going. It might take, like it took me, I was making videos for, I don't know, 3 or 4 years, probably 3 years before it really started to kick in." And so just keep pushing if that is your goal. I mean, it really depends on why you're making videos.
Yeah, that's a good point, because I mean, like the hobbyist doesn't necessarily care about growing an audience or views or anything. They just want to do it and like connect with a few people, or just do it to have it, you know, archived. I mean, I talked to a guy one time who, and I've talked about this before, like he had a YouTube channel where he made things, and the entire purpose of it was so that his son would have a record of him making things after he was gone. That's amazing, you know? And so, I mean, everybody's purpose in it is absolutely different. And I think to that end, or even, you know, you're talking about like the like working at it for a long time and not getting the feedback or not getting the results that you want. I think a lot of times the negative comment stuff that we talk about on here, and I know people don't always like to hear that, but a lot of that is also a symptom of you making a certain thing for a certain group of people and somebody else happens to see it. So a lot of those negative comments are not, they're just, you know, it's like putting a romance novel in front of somebody who likes sci-fi. They're like, "Well, what, this is not what I wanted. This is not the thing that I was going to buy at the store." It's just not a good fit. And that doesn't mean that the expectation of that other person or the creator who wrote the book is bad. They're just not a good match. And I think a lot of times the feedback, the negative feedback on things that we create is just that. So you got to kind of be okay with brushing some of that off and saying that particular interaction was not a success. Okay, there's another one out there. There's somebody else out there that loves this thing that I created. I just got to find them. So yeah. Keep that in mind as stuff is not working in the beginning, because it won't work in the beginning.
And, you know, another great example is Evan and Caitlin. They're like killing it. They were struggling along there. I don't know if they were struggling, but they started from zero and they were bumping along there. And now they get tremendous amount of views. Their videos do really, really well. And they're like completely self-sufficient. They're doing really well. And I remember having a conversation with them about, you know, should we do this television show or that? I'm like, "You guys are doing your own thing in your own world." I'm not saying I dissuaded them. They asked me my opinion. But I was like, "You're doing your own thing in your own world. If you're happy and you don't want anybody breaking that flow, just keep doing what you're doing." And that was before they were as successful as they are now. So, I mean, it's a really good testament of just playing around until you find what works for your audience and developing that audience. And, you know, they do a great job.
That's a good point, because they started off with build videos and then they found where they wanted to be. And now they make videos that they obviously absolutely love. And they don't do build videos anymore. They do the crazy stuff where they're experimenting and having fun.
Yeah.
And so it took them a number of videos before they found where they wanted to be.
Yeah. Bob, what were you going to say?
I was going to say that. I mean, they at one point they decided to pivot into something that felt more natural and sustainable for them with their personalities and the people that they wanted to interact with. And I think that's great. And I think it's okay that, you know, anybody who sees something and they want to replicate that thing, they start making videos to replicate that thing or be a part of that thing. You may find that it's not the thing you thought it was. You know, you may decide that less technical build video or more vlog style or more technical or more instructional or whatever. I mean, as you do things, you start to understand what it is you actually like about it, and you can hone in on that. So don't be afraid to continue to evolve what you're doing, why you're doing it, how you're doing it, all of those things over time. Because I think if you don't do that, you're going to pick a direction and you're going to run in that direction no matter if there's anything down there or not. Right. So you want to be able to change directions at any moment to run after the thing that's more fulfilling, the more valuable thing. So keep that in mind, I guess, as you're doing stuff. You know, I've said this a million times. Like, we always try to make every video incrementally better. So if you watch two or three videos of ours in a row, they will look almost the same as far as pace and music's type and the things that we're covering. But if you go back and watch the first videos, or maybe watch two videos that are a year apart, you'll see that there's a pretty substantial difference, because we try to incrementally improve something in every one so that over time people don't actually see the change, but we are always improving, always getting better. And that's because we're constantly looking at what we're doing and being like, well, this thing didn't really work, or you know, the stabilization on this camera isn't really what we wanted it to be over these last few videos, so let's change how we're doing that. Something like that. Always looking to make it better, make it closer to what you actually, you know, want to put out there. So I don't know if that's really relevant to the question of build videos specifically, but I think, it, you know, if you're creating something.
Yeah, I think, I mean, you can apply these techniques to just building stuff without shooting video, you know, finding what maybe you don't know what you want to make down the road, but just start making stuff and then find the path where you want to be and start making the stuff you want to make. What doesn't make a good video is a really expensive camera. That is fact. I think, and we probably all have really expensive cameras, but that just makes, I think we upgrade our cameras quite a bit to make it easier on us. It's not necessarily about quality, although it can be, but I am always looking for the fastest, easiest, quickest, and most efficient way to make a video. And that's why I'm constantly upgrading cameras and equipment. So just keep that in mind. You can shoot great video with your phone.
Yeah, absolutely. I had a discussion one time with an creator that I will not name. I was talking about getting a new camera when I was moving from 1080 to 4K. And this was the thing I just wanted to do because I wanted to have more opportunity to pan and scan if I needed to, even if I still output in 1080. And I was making this move, and I said something about it on social media, and I got an email from this person saying, why would you do that? What's the point of that? Like, it doesn't make any sense. Why are you spending the money? And it was a really strange interaction of like, why are you making the choices that you're going to make with your money in concerns to your content? Like, because you and I have different goals. That was the main thing I took away from that, and that the interaction was just weird. We had different goals. Like, the things that were important to me were not important to this person. Right on. That's totally fine. But like, I saw it as a way to step up a thing that I was doing and make, just like you're saying, make that easier on me. And that was a choice that I decided to make. And I think that was a really good technical choice, to be honest, regardless of what anybody else thinks. But to jump back to the original question and the way that it was actually framed with the list of potential things at the end of it, it was like, you know, what makes a good build video? This or this or this or this or this? Yes. I think my answer is yes. Like, we need build videos of all those things. We need people who can make coding really interesting, because it's hard to do a video about coding. It is really hard, because not a lot changes on screen. You're talking about things that are very abstract, very kind of theoretical, especially if somebody doesn't have the history for it. We need that. we need somebody, we need people, not just somebody. We need people who can take all of those things in that list and all of the other stuff and figure out a way to make those engaging and interesting to people so that they're brought into it and they want to explore further. So I guess yes is my answer to all of those things, because I think we need more of that. It's easy to do woodworking videos. And I say that from the perspective of, like, I have the tools and I have the experience to do that, right? It's easy because it's a material that's super easy to work with. It's easy to shape into what you want it to be. And it's really visual. So it's easy to make a visual transition from one thing to another, from parts to a whole or whole to parts or whatever you want to go with. It's a lot harder to do that with digital stuff, interestingly, digital fabrication. It's harder to do that with things that are kind of art-based because they're less processed and more creative. But those are things we need, you know? We need people that can do those things in addition to the woodworking and metalworking and 3D printing and all
this. It's funny, I made a decision a while back. I was always leaving out my Illustrator process just because it's hard to shoot. But I decided to, for the greater goal, the greater good of the channel and archiving the builds, I am starting to include them more. Like when I did my digital chicken coop and I did another one recently. But the point is that I want to include it so that in a year and a half from now, when someone discovers my channel and they're like, how did you get to this point? And then, oh, he started with Illustrator. And then I show my whole process and shrink it down to 30 seconds. And that's for the greater good of the future generations and the future channel watchers that are going to see this, who don't know me and don't know that I am good at Illustrator and don't realize, oh, this file just shows up, but where did it show up from? Did you get it off of Thingiverse or is this something you thought of? So to show the full on developmental process, I started including it. It hurts the channel because people are like, I don't want to see another digital thing, but I'm putting it on there for the record of learning. I'd rather be, you know, I'm really going for more of the record of referential build videos, as opposed to, you know, every once in a while I'll have a restoration video that'll make up for all the you know, the so-called low-rated videos. But I think the videos still stand alone as a good educational something for somebody. So instead of leaving all that out, I'm starting to put it.
You're building an archive. I mean, all of us are building an archive. And those, the things in that archive don't all have to be the same thing.
Right.
That's important to remember.
Yeah.
I feel, somebody asked, you know, When I posted this question on Twitter yesterday, what should we talk about? Somebody asked, do you ever not make a video or not make a thing because you know it's going to get low views and the algorithm's going to hate it and everything? And the answer to that is 100% yes. But also the answer to that is not, I want to make that, but I'm not going to make it yet, because I think any video has the potential to be a really good video. It's how to, it's finding that angle. And I think you can take a boring box and you can make it super interesting, and you can take a boring tip or something that's out of your world. And if you can come up with the right thumbnail and you can come up with the right title, you can get people to watch it. That's the hard part, is finding that angle. But I truly believe if you're creative, you can make any video good.
Yeah, I think so too. Like I said, you can interject your personality or, you know, it's funny. One of Taylor's college mates made a video, and I think it's viral now. I'm pretty sure. I don't know if it's a Chicago classmate or a New York classmate. The filmmaker filmed his mother dancing, and like it became these viral videos of his mother dancing. And that's a filmmaker just trying to, and it's kind of cheeky and funny and silly and, you know, kitschy, but they're really funny. They're intriguing. But, you know, go film a video of your mom dancing in the dark, on a dark screen. And, you know, suddenly, it's something as simple as that. And he made several of them. So, you know, that's not a beginning, middle, and end video, but that's fun. That's something that got millions of views somehow, some way. It still pops up every now and again. I see them in little memes. But it's from, I remember when it first showed, she showed it to me like 8 years ago. She's like, oh, this is a guy I went to school with. He's filming his mom dancing. I'm like, oh, that's cool. And now they pop up every once in a while. I'm like, oh, I remember hearing the origin story of that. So that's also, it's really, 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 really important to be experimental and take chances and you know, when people get a new camera, I say, just take it around with you for the day. Just film dogs, cats, neighbors, friends, driving. You know, you got to get to know the controls of the camera. Just play with it. You know, I might be going to do this NBC show. I mean, it's, I'm scheduled to go to California to shoot Making It 3 in like mid-October to mid-November. So that's another reason I bought this camera, is because I'll have a lot of downtime. I could play and get to learn this camera. I'll take it with me on my trip and try and shoot something fun and interesting while I'm there.
Mm, yeah, nice. That's a good that's a good point of get to know the equipment, so the equipment can get out of the way when it comes time to film.
Yeah,
yeah. The same goes for like editing software, yep. And you know, all of the technical ends of, I mean, I guess tools too. There's something to be said for, you know, piddling around with a brand new tool for a while in your shop, so that when you actually need to use it for something productive, it's set up and you've been through the paces with it and all that stuff. So same thing applies. I have a question unrelated to all this. Anything else on this before we jump away from it? Mm. Okay. So, and I don't know why I thought of this morning, and this is mostly directed at David. You don't have to answer it if you don't want to, but I was thinking about Maker Faire this morning. And I was thinking about how, you know, a lot of people really want Maker Faire to come back, and they're anxious for when they're going to announce the next one and where it's going to be and how that's going to look with the world as it is and everything. And then I remember like you saying last year that you were not going to travel as much and you were going to actively like kind of stay away from events just so you could be home and get more work done and stuff. And now that you've been home, we've all been kind of stuck at home for this year. Has that changed like your outlook on future, you know, sickness aside? The world, you know, yeah. Jump forward a year. The world is healthy. Everything's kind of moving back to the way it should be. And Maker Faire pops up, or some other event like that pops up. Are you still in the mindset of like, I want to avoid those types of events for the sake of non-travel and productivity? Or are you anxious to get back to that?
A little, well, both. So even the previous year, I didn't go to many events. You guys went to a bunch of events that I didn't, I purposely chose to not go to. I wanted to stay home and get work done. The idea for 2020 was a little bit different. I didn't plan on going to all those events, but I did plan on doing a lot of travel to go to, I was going to go visit this designer in Portland. I was going to go to this other person in Alabama and just film with other people to do something a little bit different, to put myself in a different environment. And I was going to do a lot of that. I say a lot, maybe like 3, 4, 5 times, and just travel just to shoot a video instead of traveling for an event. And I didn't get to do any of that. The funny thing is, I planned on traveling so much, and I don't really like traveling, but my wife Kelly, she loves traveling. And so for Christmas, I got her a gift certificate for a flight and an Airbnb gift certificate, so she could go travel by herself and do something, so she didn't feel completely left out, because she doesn't want to do the thing that I'm doing. And I mean, 2020 happened and nobody traveled at all. So I'm hoping next year the world is much healthier and I can do some of those things. But yeah, I do miss Maker Faire. I do want to do at least one big event like that, because it's so energizing. To be around other creative people is so healthy for me. And just talking to somebody face to face and seeing somebody else being super excited about what they do just energizes me. That's a long answer for that question, but
no,
that's how I feel.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. Jimmy, what about you? Because I know earlier this year we talked about how you were kind of glad that a lot of things got canceled because the rest of your year opened up a little bit. Are you looking forward to getting back to that stuff, or are you glad that things are kind of shut down? Because I'm asking this because I'm right there in the middle of both of those things.
I'm really like the idea of not having to go anywhere. Like every single Monday I wake up and I'm like, I got 5 days to make stuff, or 6 days. And then Monday comes down, I'm like, I got six. Because usually I wake up on Monday, I'm like, oh, I got to do this, I got to do that, got to get ready. That means if I'm going to travel, I got to park my car at the airport and I got to get this ready and that ready and that ready, that ready. So it's like, you know, it's just, everything. It's crazy. It's just like traveling and moving and going and, you know, making sure the tailor is going to be set up while I'm gone and that, you know, everyone's taken care of here. And I'm glad I don't have to go anywhere, but I am looking forward to doing the NBC show if that still happens. And if it doesn't, I'm just as well happy sitting here making trailers, because I could make trailers until the cows come home and get paid well and keep doing that. So, So we'll see where it goes.
Gotcha. Yeah. I'm kind of right there in the middle as well. Like I'm naturally I'll stay home and just focus on my own thing and do my own thing. And I think that has some merit, but it also kind of ends up, you know, like you miss out on, I had a conversation about this the other day. You end up missing out on a lot just because you're not exposed to new things and you're not, you were talking about, you know, David, you were talking about people being energized by people at Maker Faire. And that's absolutely true. Like, you don't really expect that going into it. You don't like think about it, but man, you get there and you're just like talking to so many people and the energy level in the entire event is just so high. And, you know, as easy it is to stay in my own environment and to work on my own stuff and with my own schedule and my own this and my own that, like those outside influences can be really, really big and really uplifting, you know, if you're exposed to them. So I'm kind of the same way. Like, I would like to do some events, but I've also really enjoyed the fact that I haven't been bound to anything, mm-hmm. to any other schedules very much this year and have, you know, had to go to things. I mean, I missed out on like travel to Europe and, you know, going out to see friends in California that we always see every year and stuff like that. But anyway, I was just curious where everybody stood on that stuff.
Being home and getting into that rhythm and having that schedule is great. That rhythm really helps. I think most people just be productive and you know what's going to happen, but interrupting that rhythm is also great. So you can appreciate the rhythm that you are in and try to get back into it or make changes to that rhythm. So interruptions are a great thing, even though they might seem like it's so disruptive at the time. But if you look back on it, you're like, oh man, I needed that. Because now I'm doing things a little bit different, and or you can just appreciate your pacing and your rhythm.
That's a good thought. There's a very musical overlap there too. You know, like the rhythm of a song makes it easy to dance, but eventually you have to break that rhythm and have a fill or have a time change or something to keep it interesting.
That's,
Yeah, who's got the metaphors today, Jimmy?
That's
Jimmy's
fun.
Asleep.
No, I'm not feeling well. I went to the doctor yesterday for several hours and just for checkup physical. And I told you guys as I was leaving, he's like, do you want a vaccine for shingles? I was like, I don't know. Do I? And he showed me what shingles is. I was like, okay, I'll take that. And so the vaccine, he said, will make you feel a little out of it. And I woke up this morning definitely feeling a little out of it, but I'm going to shake it off, get to work as soon as we're done.
Cool.
Got a lot of work to
do. Let's go ahead and wrap up the show and get closer to that. Big thanks to our Patreon supporters who always help us out. Fantastic group of people over there, and we are really grateful for everybody. Everybody gets the after show, which is a separate feed of more of us talking. And a lot of times we talk about secret, you know, stuff after. Sometimes it's just more conversation, but it's usually 15 or 20 minutes or so after each one of these episodes, and everybody at Patreon gets that. So go to patreon.com/makingit to join that crew if you want to. Big thanks to our top supporters over there, Corey Ward, Albers Woodworks, Works by Solo, Chad from Mancrafting, You Can Make This Too, Maker in Training, Funkiss Artistic Creations, Blondie Hacks, Rich Elohim Designs, and Odin Leather Goods. One of these days I'm going to do that all in one breath. I think that might be a good challenge. Or it'll sound really stupid. Go to patreon.com/makingit. We would appreciate it. And thanks to everybody over there that helps us out. David.
Yeah.
What you got?
The Social Dilemma on Netflix. It's a documentary. It interviews a lot of people who used to work for like Facebook and Twitter and Pinterest and all those. And it just talks about how dangerous social media can be and how we get into this loop of always wanting to check our phones and looking for compliments. And when we don't get them, how it makes us feel. And it's really, really good. I I mean, I make my living on social media, so it's I'm looking at this thinking, this is crazy. But I ended up removing the Facebook app off my phone after watching this. I didn't delete my account, but now I just check Facebook a couple times a day when I'm at my computer instead of all the time on my phone. And I even removed Reddit from my phone just so I can think more or just not look at my phone more. But it's a great documentary. I highly recommend it. Check it out. Yeah. Netflix.
I'm going to talk about something I've talked about before, but it just might be the perfect timing for somebody who needs the inspiration. King Mechanical. I'm just going through my viewed videos. King Mechanical, and it's all CGI mechanical actions. Never ending. Every video is 10 minutes of mechanical things happening, and you look at those and you go, oh, that's exactly what I need for this thing I'm building. And it's great. So check out King Mechanical. It's just the guy who makes CGI images of things that happen. Physical mechanical actions. It's really great. I talked about it a couple years ago.
Cool.
Great for reference.
So I have two things. One is Andy Dudas. I think that's how you say his last name. I don't know. Andy's been around for a long time, big supporter of all of us. He put up a really cool article on his blog, and he made images in like Victorian style.
Oh, yeah. That was fantastic. It's so nice what he
like
wrote.
A bunch of logos of different creators that he follows, and the three of us are included in there, as well as, you know, Punish Props and Adam
it's
Savage.
Great. He talks Evil about Ted how Smith one and led to the other, led to the other, led to the other. It was a really nice story to read.
Love it.
Yeah. Wood Whisper, Mark Rober, Smart Every Day. There's a bunch of people on there, but he made these really awesome, just a graphic of the names in this particular style, and they're all beautiful. And he has the write up in between each one. Yeah, it talks about how he found this one from this one from this one and what he gets out of each of these creators content and stuff. It's really cool, and I'm honored to be in that list with all of those people. It's also just beautiful design work, so I'll put a link to that. You can go check it out. The video that I want to recommend is a channel that I've seen pop up over the quarantine time, and then I never really got around to watching it. It's this little girl named Nandy Busha.
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen this?
Mm-hmm.
This girl's crazy.
Is
awesome.
A drummer?
She's like a 9-year-old drummer.
I've seen it pop up. I haven't watched it yet.
Oh, man, you got to watch her. She's amazing. She's really good, and she's got a great like on-screen personality. She's really into the music that she's playing. She plays covers and stuff of different songs. Like, she'll play drums, guitar, bass. But the cool thing is she like calls out musicians. Like, she'll just...
She called out Dave Grohl. That's the one I saw.
From Foo Fighters, she was just like, hey, I'm going to play one of your songs, and you need to play it back to me. And then he played it back to her and then challenged her. And then she challenged him again. And then he wrote her a theme song and recorded it.
That's so great. That song is so good.
It is good. It's like totally old school Foo Fighters. Yeah. But him and his daughters recorded it, I think, and sent it back to her. And there's videos of her like getting guitars from Tom Morello and Lenny Kravitz and, you know, these famous musicians listening to her play and stuff. But anyway, the thing that I think is super cool about it is watching her play, whether it's drums or guitar or whatever, you watch her face and she has the rock star thing inside of her. Like, her face is all over the place. She's screaming while she's playing drums. She's totally into it. And I think she's like 9 years old. She's very awesome. So it doesn't have anything to do with making, but it'll make you smile. So be sure to go check her out. That's all I got.
That's her with David Grohl. It's cool.
Oh, yeah.
I kind of took a deep dive on... it's still playing. Sorry. I took a deep dive this week on... I'll tell a little story, then we can end it. 40 years ago, the world lost John Bonham, the drummer. He died drunk, apparently, or something. Mm. And I was 13 years old, and I remember they announced this. So going 1980, it was two things. It was lost John Bonham in like early September. And then in like the beginning of October, I went to my very first concert. I went to go see Black Sabbath and Blue Oyster Cult And it was the first tour. I was 13 years old. I went with my brother John and some friends. It was the first tour with Ronnie James Dio, Heaven and Hell album, which is a fantastic album. And all around the between bands, like there was the ball bouncing and everybody was smoking pot and people walking around the arena, Nassau Coliseum, with the big banners that said "Long Live Led Zeppelin," because Led Zeppelin had announced that they were going to disband at that point because they couldn't go on without him. But that was 40 years ago. And then a few months later, going into December, I don't mean to bring the show down, but it's just crazy. That's when John Lennon was killed in December, early December of 1980. And I remember those two moments as if they happened yesterday. And talking about 40 years ago, it's just unbelievable. Like if those two were still around, it's just incredible.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
So anyway, that's it. Sorry to bring everyone down.
Those are the things that shape us, especially when we're young. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I have that. Kurt Cobain was that moment for me. I remember where I was when I heard that on the radio. And it was devastating.
Yep.
But
yeah, crazy.
So stuff goes quickly.
Yep.
Enjoy the moments that you have.
Yeah, that's it.
Let's end on that note.
That's good. All right.
All right.
Funny stuff. Thanks for listening, everybody. Show.
All right. We'll catch you later.
Bye.